Hi there, listener. You're about to experience Tadpog. Tyler and Dave play old games, and there will be plenty of game talk, but also copious amounts of crude, off-color, offensive, and immature speech. So if you are of a rather sensitive humor constitution, we're just letting you know what you're in for with this show. It has games. It has jokes. You know, just games and jokes. Take the games, take the jokes, and have a good time.
Hello, Internet. Welcome to another Tadpog podcast. It's a show that happens twice a week, where according to what Oathbreaker Blake Woods wants, two old guys talk about old games.
Just us. Keeping it intimate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that we've got that Patreon rolling, we're cutting out guest hosts.
Yeah. Because we don't want to give them a cut up.
Yeah, exactly. So just you and me from here on out.
talk about old games. Okay, this week we are going to be talking about Shadowrun Returns.
Which was requested by somebody.
Yes.
I don't know who that was. Do you know who that was?
Nope.
I know Jacob kind of suggested we play it when he called about it.
He got in on the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Like, he was a fan from the get-go.
Yeah, this was a Kickstarter game mm-hmm. that was successfully funded.
Yep.
Blake?
Man, two good Blake references right off the bat. But first, I'm your beard host, Tyler, and Shadowrun, because we talked about the original Shadowrun on Super Nintendo.
Right.
It was in the 60s or 70s on the IGN's list.
Yeah, it's pretty low on the list.
Too low, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's neither here nor there. We're past that list. It's behind yeah. us now. It's a new chapter.
It's water under the bridge.
It's a new dawn. But Shadowrun, the world it takes place in, is a dystopia.
Yes.
So thinking about dystopias made me think about one of my favorite books, which is The Giver, which on the surface is a utopian society, mm-hmm. but you very quickly see as Jonas starts getting memories that his society is highly flawed and kind of fucked up. So, of course, you know, I link those together and I started thinking about, okay, what can I tell us about The Giver? Oh, okay, there was that time my junior year in high school when our assignment was essentially to write our own Giver fan fiction and read it out loud to the class. And one thing, I reread the book my junior year of high school. It kind of came to me like Lois Lowry, I think she's the author, that I didn't even think about it for a long time, but she never addresses anything really about like sexism or racism or anything like that. She just kind of sweeps those bigger issues that would come about in yeah. utopian society underneath the rug, just doesn't address them so she can tell her story.
So did you decide to tackle these issues?
A little bit, because what I assumed
yeah.
back when I lived in my almost exclusively all-white county high school, because that in order for, I don't if somehow they've eliminated racism from the world of The Giver, I don't know if they've done that genetically, I don't understand, but I assume
The Giver is like If Hitler won.
I assume to smooth everything out that everyone is the same race, so you kind of eliminate that innate distrust that humans have toward anything that's different from each other.
Uh-huh.
So, and because Gabriel, Jonah's little brother, is described as like as cherubic, blonde, yeah. like blonde curly hair. So yeah. I assume everybody's white in uh-huh. The Giver. And plus the cover of the book, I assume they're all white people.
Welcome to The Giver cast.
Yeah, yeah.
You were like pulling back some like old shit for me because like I had not read The Giver since right after our mock trial in fifth grade. So like I haven't even really, I've barely thought about this book because you're like Jonas. And I was like, a Vaxxilay fan?
And I didn't even know it's a trilogy until the other day.
I did not know that.
So there are two
either.
More books. Like, I guess I'm going to have to read them.
Once we get done with Ready Player One, you want to do the Giver trilogy as the yes, next Tadpog
yes,
book club?
That's awesome. So I remember I wrote three sort of fan fiction short stories about The Giver.
Three. Were you only required to write one?
He wanted us to write as many as, it didn't have a length requirement, so just as many, as long as it wanted to be, as many ideas as we
could. So you enjoyed this.
I did.
Yes.
I ended up getting in trouble. But on one, like my funny one was like when Jonas leaves He's never had alcohol before, so whenever he goes out and discovers alcohol, he starts drinking and gets addicted to it. Uh-huh. And because of the way he stood up for his family and for like the way people were treated, he finds he has a love for politics, so he becomes...
Sam Burrage, allegedly.
He becomes Kennedy.
Okay.
The alcoholic Kennedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was the senator of Massachusetts.
What do you mean the alcoholic Kennedy? No, sorry.
Hi-oh, come after us, Kennedys.
Allegedly.
So my teacher thought that one was funny. But then the one I wrote about when Jonas leaves and encounters his first black person. That he doesn't know how to respond to that. And like I saw my teacher kind of like eye me a little bit. Like when I was doing it, he's like,
"No, I bet." Like he pulled out the long hook from under his desk to like pull you off the stage.
Because he was like, "I should have proofread these before I let anybody do them." And then I talked about him like wandering into cities and experimenting with drugs because he'd never seen like cigarettes or pot. And I talked about a whole big thing about Jonas basically going on like a heroin bender.
Yeah, wait.
And trying to like talk to people and like wonder if they were sunburned because he didn't understand.
Time out. What grade were you in?
I was a junior.
You were a junior?
In high school.
What was your extensive knowledge of heroin addiction at this point?
That it was real bad, Dave. It's a real bad thing you do.
Like, I want to know how you described him, like, going on this drug adventure. Like, was he just just rubbing heroin on his body? Or like, did you know how, like, all these things were done?
It was sort of, like, I just knew you shot it up.
Yeah.
So, basically, Jonas...
So, he put it in the gun.
Put it in a gun and you just shoot, you know, you get the heroin gun.
Right.
It was almost akin to, like, 30 Rock's Kenneth Parcell coming to the big city. That's Jonas making his way outside of utopian society and, like, getting in all these shenanigans because he doesn't understand what's going on.
We should write the spiritual successor to Perfect Strangers, where it's just Jonas from The Giver, and he moves in with his cousin in the big city.
But he and the Giver of Memories both live together in modern-day New York.
Well, let's do 1980s New York.
Okay, that's pretty good. So, yeah, I think I got like a B on that assignment. He was a little upset with me, but he also was like, I don't know what I expected.
Right. So, do you have those still somewhere in your mom's attic, maybe?
Maybe my mom's attic. No, I don't think so. I would be very surprised if they were anywhere.
Because what I would like to do is for you to find those, give them to me, and I will tweet them out 140 characters at a time.
Be pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I mean, I figure we have to do it for Jacob since he live tweeted
that Simpsons episode.
Yeah. On my request. So thank you for doing that. What's up, internet? I'm Dave. I'm your bespectacled host. And I was trying to think of stories since we're talking about Shadowrun. I was thinking about trying to think about stories where I might have like run in shadows. Meg had mentioned this earlier when Tyler and I were trying to come up with intro ideas. Spoilers, we did not come prepared for this episode. I don't recall really running in shadows, but I do recall running at night. I used to live out in West Paducah, which is extremely different from just Paducah proper.
They all have stars on their bellies in West Paducah.
No, that's in Lone Oak. No, that's a Paducah cut. Man. No, out in West Paducah, it was like one of those areas where everyone had kind of like 2 acres of land. And so there's like a wide, you know, there's like a wide margin between you and your neighbor.
Yeah.
So it was perfect for what we called flashlight tag. And
oh man,
in the summer, that is something that all us neighborhood kids would do pretty much on a regular basis. Or as I like to call it, grab some boobs in the dark. Because, oops, it's dark out here.
I'm sorry. Oh.
Would you like to kiss now?
Because I played a lot of flashlight tag with Josh Nance of Uniracers fame.
Also a lot of his boob touching there.
Yeah. I touch Josh's boobs all the time. I'm sorry, buddy. No, I enjoyed because he had a close-knit, like, neighborhood of friends, you know. But, like, when I would come over, like, I knew, like, Tyler Dunnigan. You know, I knew, like, one or two of them. Most of them I didn't know. So the rule of flashlight tag was, you know, you spot them and you call up their name.
Yeah.
So I would always win because they'd spot me.
And they wouldn't know
your
name.
No one knew my name. So I just immediately just run the base. Yep.
Yeah. I always had a good hiding spot because there was a gazebo that I would hide at. I think I might have mentioned this gazebo and like, did I ever tell a story about me and the neighborhood boy having a paintball war? I can't remember.
I could have gone in a few very different directions.
Did I ever tell you the story where
the blowjob gazebo of me and a neighborhood boy would go to experiment with our sexuality at a young age?
We were a lot like Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, you know. With the whole blowing each other's stuff.
Whitewash your dick. Oh, man. I don't think you did. I don't remember it.
I'm just sucking a dude's dick and he walks by. I'm like, man, this is so much fun. Oh, man. Just, oh, this is so much fun. Don't you want to try this?
That's how you got 40 people to suck this dick in one day.
Man. I bet Mark Twain's really happy about this conversation.
I feel like that's what he was going for.
That was his intent.
Oh, man.
That's it. I feel like that was pretty weak. I feel like this is one of those situations where we need a guest host.
Yeah, unless we have a really strong, funny intro. Yeah.
Which I did not bring that to
the table. Which we've almost done 200 of these things now, so.
We're running out of things to say, is what you're saying.
We'll have to start talking about current events and shit like that pretty soon.
I'm not.
I had a Gawker article I was prepared to talk about too. So
what Gawker article?
About.
You want to save it?
A guy at who was trying to sue Applebee's because he ordered fajitas, had them served to him, and then he bent his head to say a prayer too closely, and he prayed too long over the fajitas, and he had like burns on his face. And then he tried to sue Applebee's for not telling him how hot the fajitas would be so he wouldn't hold his face that close to them.
He burned his – that is kind of hard to believe, though. He
burned his face praying over fajitas.
He didn't realize – he didn't notice?
He's like, that's probably fajitas I'm smelling. Probably. Thank you, God, for these delicious fajitas.
That's probably the warmth of our Lord that I'm bathing my face in. Not hot. Steaming fajitas.
I mean, I can only imagine, like, they do, they come out, they bring you that, because that's what they do with fajitas, you know, they get the pan super hot, they spread the lime over it so it sizzles, bring it out, but you know that the steam is coming up, don't just fucking plop your face right over it, but, alright.
Like Garfield, I feel like that's how Garfield would eat fajitas. Applebee's would have been bankrupt by now if Applebee's was a Garfield sanctioned restaurant.
If everybody ate like Garfield, Applebee's would be out of business. Tweet it, write it in the sky, and gossip your teardrops. Oh, man. All right. Shadowrun.
Do you hear that?
Garfield eating fajitas?
While Tom Sawyer convinces neighborhood boys to... No, I mean, I'm glad that you hear that. I'm glad I'm not the only one who hears that. It's weird because that slurping eating sound also sounds like a train that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
A Dave Reads from Wikipedia train. Okay, guys. First of all, let me tell you a little bit about Shadowrun. I feel like we need to double up. Shadowrun is a science fantasy tabletop role-playing game, Tyler, that is set in a near future, like 2050, somewhere around there.
All right.
It combines genres of cyberpunk, urban fantasy, and crime with occasional elements of conspiracy fiction, horror, and detective fiction. So that's just a little bit about Shadowrun, in case you're not familiar with the setting.
Otherwise, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You just sum it up by saying it's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. Shadowrun Returns is a science fantasy turn-based tactical role-playing game developed and self-published by Harebrained Schemes. It takes place in the Shadowrun campaign setting from the science fantasy tabletop role-playing game. Period. That was a long couple of sentences. The game was successfully crowdfunded, Blake, through Kickstarter, part of a trend of high-profile developers launching projects on the site. It was released for Microsoft Windows, the Mac platform, Linux, iOS, and Android in 2013. An expansion pack entitled Shadowrun Dragonfall was released in 2014. That was later converted to a standalone release and is now sold as Shadowrun : Dragonfall - Director's Cut.
All right.
This is interesting because I heard about this, but I don't know much about it. On January 13th of 2015, this year, Harebrained Schemes launched another Kickstarter campaign to partially fund their next game, Shadowrun Hong Kong. Like the Dragonfall Director's Cut, Shadowrun Hong Kong will be a standalone release built using an upgraded version of the Shadowrun Returns engine, which I think is great because I'd like more content for this game. But man, why not just release it as DLC? Like, why does it have to be a standalone thing each time? That's weird to me.
Because I want more people doing more things in this setting.
Yeah.
Because it's so good and it's such a deep well to draw from.
The setting is, it's really good. And it's not, but the system isn't one that I want to run a tabletop game for.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you and I played it at Dragon Con a couple years back. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing it and being like, man, this is way different. Like, the rules for this game, it's way different than any other, like, D&D, Call of Cthulhu, Mutants and Masterminds, like any other system out there. It seemed like the most complicated one.
It's as complicated as you would expect it to be in a futuristic setting where you can be all the traditional elements plus a hacker, a robotics expert, a shaman. All the different races have tons of different rules and effects. And I mean, if you really sat down and you could make some amazing games in this, but you have to have some fucking dedicated people to learn all the ins and outs of it.
Or at least one dedicated GM to run it.
Yeah.
Who knows all the rules inside and out, which I feel like this system is one of those where it's like, you kind of have to like dedicate yourself to it, where it's like, well, okay, I can learn Shadowrun, but I'm going to like need to forsake a whole bunch of other tabletop games in order to memorize all of it.
Because God, our Shadowrun game, like the DM was competent.
Yeah.
You could tell he was more excited about the setting and then learn about the rules.
Yeah, yeah.
But generally, as what happens with Dragon Con is occasionally you'll get at that table where one of the players knows more than the guy who's running the game. And they really want you to know how well they know this game. Because typically it's a very like rail thin, unattractive dude with long hair and glasses that will constantly override.
Why has it got to be glasses, man? Why has it got to be glasses?
I don't know. You tell me. Usually the less than competent DM, he usually has a beard.
Well, I mean, okay, fair enough. All right, Tyler, let me tell you why you're wrong. I don't know if you know, but I'm kind of an expert on this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That whole thing is the reason that like that holds me back from running any game at Dragon Con. Cause like, you know, when I'm at Dragon Con, I'm usually gaming, or at least the first couple years I was. And I'm really interested in running a game, but I don't know that I really want to, deal with that bullshit. Yeah.
Actually he can't do that because, right? Orcs on Tuesdays aren't allowed by their religion to pick up metal objects, so that can happen. So
I don't know how I'd handle
that kind of shit.
Because like when we game, it's like, I don't know. I feel like someone says that and it's like, shut up, motherfucker.
It's fine when it's your friends. Yeah, it's like, it's fine. We'll look it up later.
Right.
We'll look it up later. Right. So, but yeah, at Dragon, it's a whole different beast. Yeah. Just trying to game with 6 complete strangers who all mostly feel a little awkward around each other, unless you get like a group of friends. Then it's fun. Like when all of us will play as a group together where it's just us at a gaming table, we usually have a great time. The DM has a great time. But it's when all the randos come in, well, even, shit gets weird.
Yeah, I even think it's kind of weird when it's like you and me playing a game and the rest of the group is just randos, because it's one of those situations where at least I know that I can fall back on you. Like if the rest of, like if the whole other group is just fucking duds, I can be like, well, there's little Tyler's here.
Well, I try. I normally, when I play the game, I know what stereotypes I need to be friendly to. So old guy, good. Be friends with old guy.
Yeah.
Because normally there's one old guy at the table. Be friends with him. You're good.
Sometimes it's me.
Mildly befriend fat guy in a trench coat.
Uh-huh.
I mean, don't like be really nice to fat guy in a trench coat, yeah, because then you've got someone who's gonna like every time he sees you, hey! No, just kind of like don't be a dick to fat guy in a trench coat. But skinny guy who knows the rules, fuck that kid. Fuck that kid. But the actual game.
So that's Shadowrun. I feel like we've covered the system pretty well.
Because I bought Shadowrun Returns on like Steam summer sale like last year, I think. And I hadn't played. I bought the base game and the Dragonfall DLC. So when I sat down to play it, I installed it. And I saw there was like a thing about installing like the DLCs and stuff like that. So I thought, since it's called DLC, that it's something that you play the main game and then you run into the DLC.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's quote unquote DLC. It's a completely standalone game. I had no idea. So you
texted me the other night and I can't remember exactly what you said. You said something about that. You asked me if I played the DLC. Mm-hmm. And my response was, there's DLC for this game? Because yeah, like, I had no idea. Because I didn't buy it in the same sale that you did. I can't even remember when I bought Shadowrun or Shadowrun Returns. But I don't have the DLC.
So whenever I sat down and I open it up and I see like two different options to play, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to pick here. Well, I know Dragonfall's the DLC, so I guess I want to play the game with the DLC included. So I chose Dragonfall.
Okay.
But Dragonfall is a completely different standalone game,
yeah,
that is different from the main game Shadowrun Returns that came out originally.
And see, that's weird to me, because if they're doing it as a standalone game, it should like have its own launcher, right? Like, yeah, it shouldn't be that confusing. Yes. Where it's like, yes, launch Shadowrun Returns. Okay, what game would you like to play? I thought Shadowrun Returns, but
so it turns out, yeah, you played what, Dead Man's? What is the base game is called like Dead Man's Trigger or
Dead Man's Switch.
Dead Man's Switch, yeah. So we got the full Dragonfall, Shadow Dragonfall, Dragon Shadow, the Fall of the Shadow Dragons experience all together. That the Dead Switch of the Dragons of Shadowrun.
Oh, that's all right. I have strokes too.
I'm drinking hooch right now. So I was. Meg took Kenna and they went to Nashville to visit a friend the last 2 days, and I've been sick and I was tired of feeling sick.
Yeah.
So I made a pitcher of hooch just to drink and have a mild buzz and play Shadowrun and try and not feel sick while they were gone.
Now I know why you selected the wrong game.
So now I'm drinking this hooch and I don't know if Shadows and Dragons and Falls and
you're whatever. Like you're like Jonas entering the entering the real world and experiencing hooch for the first time. Experimenting with mixing hooch and RPGs. So I'm actually kind of glad that we played different versions, because I am interested in playing Dragonfall, but maybe I don't want to spend the $15 on it.
Yeah, Dragonfall, like I enjoyed the experience thoroughly. I do not think it's worth $15.
Really?
Though. Yeah.
I don't know how much Shadowrun Returns is on Steam right now, but I can say that what I feel like whatever I paid for it was worth it, mm-hmm, because I really enjoyed the core game. Mm-hmm. It was about, it took me 14 hours to get through. I did take my time with it. And I don't know how it was in Dragonfall, but in Dead Man's Switch, I created a character. Mm-hmm. And from there, the story just unfolded kind of around me. It wasn't about my character, really. It was about a fellow Shadowrunner named Sam Wyatt, who died. And there's a cool flashback scene that you play through, and once of you and Sam on a run that goes south. And after that, I get a comm message from Sam, who's dead, and says that he's sending this message because he's dead. His death triggered this pre-recorded message, and he asks me to find his killer and bring his killer to justice. So that's what all that whole game is about. It's about finding Sam's killer, but it kind of splinters off into all these bizarre avenues, which is a lot of fun, because what seemed like a really straightforward mystery kind of becomes this bigger story that involves Seattle. All this took place in Seattle. So I don't know, what's Dragonfall's deal? Like, what's the story about?
Well, in Dragonfall, of course, you make your character, and you're part of a long-established team. You're the newbie of the team.
Okay.
With a highly accomplished Decker named Monica.
Okay.
And Deckers are basically, because in Shadowrun, a Decker can basically go inside the internet.
Like, right.
And have like a cyber form where they can physically fight through security and things like that is how it's played out in-game.
Right.
So
it's
part of this.
It's a flashy way to do hacking.
Yeah. It's an interesting, entertaining way as opposed to like trying to like type stuff out. It's a way to make hacking interesting in an RPG.
Whenever you hack, you essentially watch Reboot. That's pretty much how
it is. It's not like in Fallout 3 and New Vegas where you play that. What is it? It's called Mastermind. I think is the game it's copied off of.
Uh-huh.
To hack is you just like trying to guess all these words hidden in code, but
it's actual combat.
Yeah, actual combat, actual strategy, trying to figure this out. But your Decker is your best friend. You get to make up your backstory. Either she's new to you, you just picked up this job, she's a long-term friend, or she's your lover. You get to pick.
Or she's Monica Geller.
Or she is Monica Geller, who has survived the chaos dunk. And finally showed up in jam.
I really like this like Ready Player One style of like this person just chose Monica Geller as her avatar. And like everyone just rolls with it. They're like, whatever. All right, we get your 1990s reference.
But it's the same kind of premise as the Shadowrun you played. Because you're on a mission, the mission goes south when you break into a mansion, and when the Decker plugs herself in to break through the security system, she dies. On the spot, she dies.
Yeah.
And then
Ross is all upset.
But there's a member of your team who blames you that you have to like be nice to try to keep them around.
Yeah.
And it's basically you trying to find out what this thing is, because Monica is one of the best Deckers in the world, how this thing could have immediately killed her the way it did. So then you start finding out more and more about this. Whenever the event that caused a lot of things in Shadowrun to happen was whenever the other races and magic sort of came into our world, that when this happens,
the awakening,
like dragons also come in. And dragons they're smarter than humans. They're, for the most part, evil, and they come in and start basically dragons. It's basically known that dragons kind of operate behind the shadows and pull strings from, but that's how they operate, except for one dragon named Firewings. Firewings was just like, fuck these humans. And instead of like pulling the strings from behind, he killed everybody and everything in his path.
I like that because that seems more like, I don't know, you're a fucking dragon, right?
Yeah.
Like, I like that this one dragon was like, why are you doing this shit from behind the shadows? We are dragons.
Yeah. So he like levels cities, destroys everything. Like the normal firearms can't penetrate his, his scales.
Yeah, because he's a dragon.
His fire melts steel. So he's
great.
He's just destroying everything.
Yeah.
In Germany, because this takes place in Berlin.
Ah, cool.
So basically he levels most of Germany and all the scientists are scrambling to try and figure out how to kill him.
You and David Hasselhoff have to fight this chaotic evil dragon.
You, David Hasselhoff, and Jim Hitler, the great-great-grandson of Adolf Hitler.
Jim.
Eventually there's this one scientist who figured out this weapon that could hurt Firewing, and he shoots Firewing out of the sky, and Firewing crashes into this radioactive graveyard called the Sox.
And that can't be good.
So, and they think, oh, well, we can't go in there because of the radiation, but surely that dragon's dead.
It's called the... Wait. No.
Except for the scientist who made the weapons, like, no, she's probably not dead. We should go check. No, it's fine.
We insist.
No, it's fine.
Shut up, scientist.
So, like, they, like, some people go in, like, they can't, like, they find, like, the body and she's dead and things like that, but things keep happening that kind of show that she's not dead. So there's something going on with Fire Wings that you eventually find. You, as I still, I think I'm on like the last mission now, so I haven't finished.
And I don't want spoilers because I actually do want to play Dragonfall.
So the Fire Wings and what happened to Fire Wings after the scientist shot her out of the sky ties into Monica's death and you now taking over. She names your character her successor, and your team is kind of pissed about it because you're the new person.
It's kind of interesting that, like, right off the bat, there's a difference, and that is in Dead Man's Switch, there isn't a set party. Like, there isn't just a set group of runners that you join. It's kind of just you on your own, and you do runs, but when you do it, you go through a fixer, and you essentially hire mercenaries to join you. There are reoccurring characters, and usually you can hire them on for less money. Or less New Yen, I think the currency is called. And that's cool. And each of those characters, like those characters, those specific characters have their own little story. But everyone else that you hire just kind of has no story. They're just mercenaries that you hire.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that you said that in the game that you played, the run also goes south. I feel like that is a reoccurring theme. Like, in this game, like, that has got to be like an ongoing joke because these runs like hardly ever work out.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't know why they do it because it's like
basically there's the suits, the corporate people who have all the money, wage slaves who do all the other jobs, and then shadow runners who basically are professional criminals. But the suits are so good at their job, like, criminals are just dying left and right. Yeah,
but there's a whole lot of criminals.
Yeah.
So you just keep throwing criminals all day, I guess. What was the team set up in Dragonfall?
Because you have your fixer, a guy named Paul. He's the father figure for everybody. He sets up everything. You have your base of operations. You have him. Everyone's set up. You have...
he runs a great... stream service. He streams all of his shadow runs. What's Paul fixing today?
There's Dietrich, who is your tattooed like old shaman. There's Eric, who is a troll, not a decker, but the drone specialist.
Yeah, okay. The rigger.
Rigger. Mm-hmm. Monica was your decker, but Monica dies. And then Glory is your combat medic. And then whatever you are.
What did you play? What class did you?
I was going to ask you about that.
Okay.
I normally,
yeah.
What in this kind of game, what I enjoy playing is someone high intelligence and high charisma.
Okay.
Because I want to be able to
see all the
hack through everything. Yeah. I want to be able to have all the speech options. Yeah. But for this game, I was like, no, I have a short time to play this game, so I'm gonna kick down the door. So I played a troll adept who's basically a monk. So I played a female troll adept named Betty.
Awesome.
And Betty has high strength, high body, all the martial adept skills, unarmed combat. So,
did you like it?
I did. I ended up like I still put a lot in charisma for her because there are so many options you just need to have charisma for, and trolls can only get to like
six, I think.
Yeah, six charisma. Six, and I got implants to get it to seven.
Well, you know, so, that'll do it, I guess.
I had some pheromone implants.
I played, do you want to take a guess?
I'm going to assume maybe you played Finnegan.
I didn't play Finnegan. I played a Decker who I named Red Naga because why not? Okay. I'm like, he's a Decker. He probably, this is his name in the Matrix, Red Naga, mm-hmm. Which I thought was really cool. They're intelligence based. I played an elf because they have no cap on intelligence, and I also didn't want to play a big run into melee dude. Mm-hmm. So it was really interesting. I really liked the class, and the things that you can do in the Matrix is really fun. But my main gripe was they, I guess, wanted to put in place a contingency in case the main player, you, didn't play a Decker. Because every time you go into the Matrix, there's someone who is like, I will go in there with you and help. And it's, I kind of just want to be like, no, I got this. This is my thing. I've built my entire character around this. I don't need your help. But that was like never an option.
Oh.
So whenever I was in there, anytime we were in the Matrix, it was just over like that, because like I've got all these maxed out like deckings and maxed out intelligence, and then there's always just someone with me who's pretty competent.
Because I really fulfilled the role that needed to happen in the party just by coincidence. They need that huge person that can take some damage and get up and fight.
Yeah.
Glory's good at that, but she's not
as good as, she's no Betty.
She's no Betty.
Do
Betty run up there just punching the shit out of people. It was good. It was good.
The adepts get like chi magic or something like that.
Yeah.
How does that work? Are those all like other like buffing abilities, or are they offensive?
There's
spells,
one
or?
Where like I can killing hands just boost your unarmed damage really high, so I can do a little bit more. If I had that on, I'm doing more than the guns do.
Yeah.
You know, for a short amount of time. There are, so you can attack enemies that are all side by side. Some of those moves, magic resistance. Stuff to ignore armor, stuff like that.
Did you?
And if your willpower is high enough, which is what your adept is based on, then you can. You have all the options to read auras and stuff outside, and when you meet people, and to open your third eye, and you can see like where people have put in passwords and stuff like that, and read what they've done. And things
that's
like
cool.
That, so,
I don't know how do they handle the rest of your group? Did you control them, or were they AI controlled in Dragonfall?
I controlled them in combat. Yeah.
Okay, that's how it worked in the base game as well.
I didn't like that I couldn't equip them with stuff. I wish I could outfit them with guns and armor, and you can pick their items right before you go into combat.
Uh-huh.
But I know they're wearing the shittiest armor,
right?
But like you can't upgrade it.
That's how it was in Dead Man's Switch as well. And that really annoyed me, because as I progressed, like as I got better with submachine guns, I would buy better submachine guns, and then I would just kind of be stuck with the lesser guns. And then I would look at one of my other party members, and they would have like the shittiest fucking gun. And it was like, if I could just give them this gun, I would. Like I would just give it to them, because
You can't sell them.
So it's just kind of like, well, okay, this sucks.
Yeah, because like, I want to buy more spells for my shaman and stuff like that, because I have the same four spells throughout the entirety of Dragonfall, which he's good. He was a good support character.
Yeah.
He wasn't like a mage that nuked stuff. So he was very good for my character to lay buffs on me, and I would run in and tear shit up.
There was a dwarven mage that I continually hired for runs, and he was just a buffer. This guy was awesome. In one of the last runs, you meet like this powerful NPC who I don't know if he has significance in Shadowrun universe. I think he does. His name is Harlequin. He is an elf with like Harlequin tattoos all over his face. Mm-hmm. And he's some sort of knight. And he has this, I guess it's like a bastard sword. And I swear to you, he's got this buff where he can give himself additional speed per round. And then I would just buff him up with my mage. I would give him a higher critical rate, and I would give him haste. And this motherfucker would, I just ran around with him and just killed everybody, like Kill Bill style, in one of the last runs.
That's one of your monk abilities too, is you can increase your speed and stuff like that. And when I fought like blood mages, there was a speech option to focus my chi and repel their magic and shit like that, so I could get the drop on them. It was
that's
interesting
cool.
How stuff worked out. I was really impressed with it. One thing Jacob complained about, I guess they have since fixed it, because when Jacob played the saving,
yes, because I was waiting for that too, because I remember distinctly him complaining about that. Do you recall exactly what his problem was with it?
It was strictly auto saves before and after missions.
Okay,
which that's still there, but now you just have the option to save whenever you want.
Yeah, I could see that being incredibly frustrating, because especially
with multi-part missions and shit like that.
Yeah, and some of those missions are a lot longer than others, so you never really know how long it's going to take going in.
And it could be a pretty hard game. There were some missions where I was just like, fuck, where do these guys keep coming from? But so I would have been frustrated if I couldn't save and reset. Like, you hit the wrong thing on the wrong computer, and now alarms are going off and shit like that, so... I would have been frustrated, but I'm glad that that is fixed.
What did you, we talked about mages a little bit. What did you think about the magic system and how it worked?
Because everything was based on just like a, on a cooldown timer.
Yeah, it was a cooldown timer, and you essentially, your spellcasters would, they had their spells. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like that they chose those spells, and that's what they have. And they can cast those spells, like, the more powerful it is, the less frequently they can cast it. Like, they'd have to wait two rounds before they could cast it again, kind of deal. Did you like that, or did you feel like it was limiting, or...
I feel like it was limiting, and also like you can't really heal yourself outside of combat very well. Like the magic, you can only use the healing magic in combat,
right?
And that's frustrating, especially when like my mage is really, really low.
Yeah,
and like I know he has healing magic.
Right,
I just want him to use it on himself before I get in the next battle and he dies right off the bat by a stray bullet. But yeah,
I kind of liked the idea of it. I mean, I agree with you. It is. I felt like it was limiting, but I also like the idea of it not magic not being a resource, because in Dungeons & Dragons and like Baldur's Gate, you know, all kind of like D&D based games, your spellcasters, like their spells are a resource, and they need to recharge that resource by going to sleep, by taking a nap, and then they wake up and they have their spells back. I thought this is kind of an interesting alternative where you have a smaller set of spells available. They just never exhaust themselves. You just have to wait a little while for them to come back.
And of course, like the more AP you have or more actions you can take in a round.
Right.
So like a spellcaster can cast multiple spells.
Right.
And spells, the more powerful they are, they cost more AP. Like I think to a max of, I think you take four actions in a round, being movement, attack, spell, or item, or whatever. Each take one action point to use, or more.
I thought that was cool. I like that, and I think it fits the setting more than a traditional kind of spell magic system.
And this is basically, I you could play it exclusively with your mouse. I mean, you might have to use the keyboard to type in a few passwords, but even like numbered passwords, you have a keypad, so you only need your keyboard to type in a few words, but otherwise, strictly 100%, you play with your mouse. And I felt like that was a little clunky at times, because I would try to click an enemy, and if they're in the corner or like in a cluster of like four enemies, finding one is really difficult, or I would click just slightly off center, and instead of attacking them, I would run behind them and waste an action.
Yep.
Whenever I'm trying to go up to the upper right-hand corner to where you're the equivalent of the Windows Start button is for all your stuff. Like, I go up there, I drag everything way off screen into black, and then I have to find everything, get everything centered again. So the controls in that regard were a little clunky.
Yeah, I think, and the biggest problem that I had was, you touched on it, is when you're trying to select an enemy, one particular enemy that is clustered around other enemies and allies. It depends on how they're positioned, but like it can be damn near impossible to select the specific one that you want, which is a big downfall to the game, because this game has some very, I mean, I shouldn't say very tactical elements, but it has a touch of tactical element to it. It's not just a straight up RPG like Final Fantasy or something like that. I mean, you move your party around the map, and depending on where you place them, you can get cover, and line of sight is important. So I mean, there are tactical elements to this game. I wish that it always worked when you select enemies, because sometimes it's really important, because like if you accidentally run behind somebody instead of attacking them,
you expose yourself. Yeah, you have no cover.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah,
and there's no like undo, because like everything, like whenever you do something, you can't go back. It's not like Final Fantasy Tactics or something where it's like, I accidentally moved there. Yeah. I don't want to confirm this. Yeah,
and the area of effect, I felt like that was hard to distinguish.
Yeah,
because like, you get this strange kind of grid that pops up.
The orange cube.
Yeah, also like where the light of the cube extends, you might hit as well. So it was just like, I could never tell if I'm going to hit myself, if one of my guys is right on the edge of that. Sometimes I will. Sometimes I'll miss somebody in the middle, because it's all like based off percentages.
I was about to ask, is that like just an extension of the tabletop system?
I guess so, but I feel like these percentages are fucked up. Because, like, I go up on somebody, I have a 92% chance to hit them.
Yeah.
I get four swings. I'll miss three times out of four. Consistently.
Yeah.
Like, something's weird.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about the percentages they show you.
Yeah.
Like, when you're going to attack them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I ran into that, too. But like, I just...
how did I... 92%?
I know.
How do I miss three times in a row?
I know. I ran into that as well. So I just kind of... decided, well, these percentages are, I mean...
just arbitrary numbers.
Yeah.
You're just throwing them up there just because.
I mean, it's difficult to say they're an abstraction because there they are, very much a quantifiable percentage. But, you know, whatever.
Also, I would have liked a little bit more of a tutorial sort of on how to play. I don't know, maybe because they assume you played the base games. There's not much in Dragonfall. But I didn't have, like, you make your character, here you go. You know, I didn't... then I was like, all right, well... how do I equip stuff?
Okay.
How do I... you have to buy and then equip spells before your runs. Then you have to figure out, like, if you're going to buy any tech. You know, you don't know the consequences of the tech off the bat.
Yeah.
Because you can buy and have cyberware implanted into yourself, but basically magic operates on your humanity. The more cyber tech you have, the less human you are, so the less magic you can use.
Right. Which I think is cool. That's a cool way to balance that stuff.
There's... Glory has a very interesting backstory. Because she is maxed out on tech to the point that she's almost emotionless, and she has a very good reason as to why she's like that. Because all her tech is like very old and dated. Hmm. It's like, why would you put all this stuff onto your body and rid yourself of humanity with obsolete tech? So she was one of the more interesting characters in the game for me.
I was completely teched out. I had like two fucking cybernetic legs, had a cybernetic arm, had cybernetic eyes. Like, I mean, I just went full tilt. Was like, all right, load me up. I just treated this pretty much like if it were me in 2050. It'd be like, oh, I can have like robot fucking arms and legs and eyes. Yeah, let's do that. Oh, I'm gonna be less human. Fuck it, let's do it anyway.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, perfect.
No, I needed my spell slots for my adept skills, so I only had one.
Yeah.
I had that pheromone implant, and that was it.
Yeah, they kind of give you a little, I wouldn't say it's a true tutorial, but they definitely ease you in.
Mm-hmm.
There's a awesome cameo of Jake Armitage from from the original Shadowrun SNES game. He's in it.
Awesome.
He joins your group on two occasions. And he's a lot of fun. It's nice that they kind of do a callback to that. And when you first meet him, it is in a morgue. he pops out of the fucking whatever you call the file cabinet thing to keep corpses in. The slab.
The corpse cabinet, yeah. The body hutch.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, I had a lot of fun playing this game. I mean, there was they're a startup. They're an indie game company. They don't have a lot of money to throw.
Yeah, kind of. I will say this, though. When I finished, and I'm really sorry to interrupt, but the thing that I say might influence what you're about to say. The creator and original designer of Shadowrun is the lead at Harebrained Schemes.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not saying he's a rich man. He might not be a rich man.
Yeah.
But I guess my point is he probably has more money than like you and I combined. So like he probably has the means to start a game.
Because it's a lot of reading.
Yeah.
Because like there's not like – I think maybe there were like two video cutscenes and they're stills. So like – I would have liked a little more production value in the game.
Really? See, I didn't get... amazed that you got cutscenes.
Yeah. Because
it was just straight... everything was straight up reading for me.
Mm.
Which I thought... I was going to ask you about that because I thought you were going to love that. Because I know that you... and you, like, Hateful Boyfriend. That was a shitload of reading.
Yeah.
And I know that you like
reading
that.
Reading again, doesn't bother me at all. But, like, I found myself glossing over it a lot because, like...
What's that hooch?
I guess the way it's... Yeah. I guess the way maybe it's presented just, like,
in
a tiny box in the, you know, part of the screen. And it's just, like, six paragraphs at a time where I'm just, like, I just want to click and do something. Like, I don't know. I don't feel like it was presented... The dialogue going back and forth, but when I'm, like, going into, like, backstory or somebody's explaining something to me, I feel like it was kind of a drag.
I liked it a lot. And it might, they just might not have had the same amount of polish in Dragonfall, but I felt like playing Dead Man's Switch, man, it made me feel like I was playing a tabletop game. Just and maybe it's because I've read so many mods before. Like, I'm used to that language. Mm-hmm. I'm used to, like, reading three paragraphs to kind of get an idea across. But it was, I felt like this was the closest I felt to playing a tabletop game while playing a video game, and it not feeling like it wasn't a video game.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't feel like I was playing Shadowrun on Roll20 or something like that. I mean, it very much felt like I was playing an RPG with light tactical elements, but at the same time, I got that really, that someone's running a mod for me kind of feel, which I like.
It reminds me of what Jacob would say, like, whenever I run a mod with Jacob. So, like, Blake is a little bit like this. If I have the mod open and the mod says, a mod being...
A module.
A module, a pre-planned, like Dungeons & Dragons Adventure, where everything is planned out for you and you just...
The DM just runs it. Yeah.
There'll be a part like, when the PCs enter this room, read this.
Yeah.
And I can read that and, like, Jacob will just, like, kind of zone out and be like, you're reading that, I don't get it. Whenever you just explain it to me in your own words, and then I get it.
Yeah.
So I can read it out loud, and then I explain it, I guess, in my own inflection and interpretation, and then Jacob pays attention and he gets it. And Blake is a little bit like that. So, like, it's maybe all, that's why for me it was a little bit like a little bland in some parts.
Yeah.
Where, like, I don't feel like, I feel like it was someone mechanically feeding me something as opposed to, like, an organic person expressing it.
I get that. I understand that. And I've played enough mods, and I've played enough, like, just off the cuff impromptu. I can recognize the difference. And I guess it's one of those things where they're completely two different animals, right? Because I like running mods and playing mods because it's so neutral. Mm-hmm. I like it because it's like, this is what it says. I'm going to read it, and I'm going to try to make it interesting, but I'm not going to give you any, like, special clues or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's what happens a lot in impromptu, because it's like, all right, you guys enter a room, and then there's a floor, and it's all, the floor's made out of marble, and then there's all these, like, beautiful tapestries, and then you barely notice a switch, and it's like everyone just focuses on that thing. Okay, yeah. Well, that thing. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, why did I even say all the other stuff? Like, I might as well have just been like, you guys walk in a room, there's a switch. Would you like to press it?
That's why one of the first games I ever ran was like, you walk into a room, there's a rope in the middle of the room, and a note to it says, pull me. And they're like, okay, well, I'll go and look up. There's a darkness spell on the top of the rope. You can't see where the rope's extending. So then it became like a 45-minute discussion over whether or not to pull this rope and trying to figure out what it was attached to.
Yeah.
And they're fucking, like, throwing coins up into the darkness. And they're trying to send, like, animal companions up there. And just, you know, no one wants to say either we walk out or we pull the rope. So
that's a great, like, all right, pro tip. DM pro tip. Don't have anything planned for that session. Throw a rope. Throw a rope in the room leading into darkness. You won't have to worry about the session. Because it's pretty much proven that the party will just argue about whether or not the rope should be pulled. Just do like two or three rooms of that. You're set. You're done. You can plan next week.
Yeah, there are absolutely some players who are like so meticulous and want to make sure they're never tricked and never trapped and never surprised that they will absolutely like agonize over pulling a rope or not.
I know, because I used to be that guy. I refuse to be anymore. Like, I'm now I feel like I'm the antithesis to that. Like, I feel like sometimes when you're running a game, I feel like I piss you off because you're just like, fuck it, I'm doing it.
Nope, pull it. Yep. I'll pull that rope.
Like, just immediately.
Six of those people go, no!
I'm doing it.
And most time, since it's you, like, a bag of money falls down. But as opposed, like, if Josh does it, like, pfft, dragon comes down. Rope dragon, he's mad. You pulled his dick off.
Yeah. Hey, did you say that earlier? Did you say that dragon landed a place called Socks?
Socks.
Socks?
It stands for something in German. Oh, okay. It's S-O-X.
Okay. It's curious if it had like some weird Earthbound reference to the
all of the sauce. Places have very long German names.
Yeah.
So like a lot of it they'll translate into English or just abbreviate.
Is there do you run across a dragon that helps you in Dragonfall?
You find out a lot about other dragons. And basically every other dragon in the world, they basically, when the dragons come in, they all become CEOs of various mega corporations.
Yeah.
They just somehow take over. So I just found out, like, my fixer starts studying dragons and, like, trying to figure out if anybody is helping Fire Wings or not, if there are any allied dragons.
Yeah.
He loves just a laundry list of all these corporations dragons are the CEOs of. It's like, I don't think so.
The reason I ask is because at the end of Dead Man's Switch, there is a dragon from, well, a representative of a dragon from Germany that comes to kind of, he's part of this league that comes together that fights a shaman.
Hmm.
So I was curious if he's mentioned in.
There's a dragon named Lawweir that's mentioned a whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's mentioned a lot, but hasn't like helped me or anything.
They don't say outright, but I think that man that was there claiming to be his representative, I think that was the dragon.
Oh,
Because you say something at one point where like, I love the dialogue options. I really love the dialogue options because it's set up in a way where you can't go back on something you said. Mm-hmm. And I love that because some RPGs that have dialogue trees, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, they'll give you several options where it's like, you walk up to a woman and you're like, oh man, you're really ugly. And then the other option is, hey, how are you doing? I'm your friend. And then like, if you choose the first option, you're like, hey, what's up, ugly? She'll get mad. And then it'll like, just go back to the dialogue tree and it'll have the second option there still. You'd be like, hey, what's up? I'm your friend. It's cool. But this game isn't like this. Mm-hmm. And I love that because this game like actually has consequences for the things you say. Like if you say something to somebody and piss them off, you might just be shit out of luck with that character.
Yeah.
Because the conversation just fucking ends. You're done. You're not getting anything else from this character.
Yeah.
And that's what happened when I was talking to this representative of what was the dragon's name?
Lawweir.
Lawweir. I said something like, how's it feel? What's it like to be a servant to a dragon? Which I didn't think was a shitty question. But the representative said, what makes you think that I'm a servant? And then like all the conversation just completely ended. So I think I insulted this dragon who was in, I think, a dwarven form.
There's one of the characters, the guy who blames you for killing Monica. Like you should have.
Joey.
Pepped her from dying. Joey. Monica, whenever you check Monica's basically online diary, she writes you a message like, it's very important to be nice. Eric has skills that you're going to need. He's hard to deal with. Don't take his shit and make sure you give him as much shit in return. Because if you try to be nice to him, he's going to see through your bullshit. So anytime you're nice to him, dialogue stops.
Yeah.
You have to make fun. You don't go to the option where you blatantly make fun of him, but you go to the option that's just like, you give him a little bit of shit, but also say thank you. And then he's receptive to that.
That's cool.
So you have to, because you have to see that
right.
Or to deal with him to get more options with him.
I think that the dialogue is really funny in, especially in my case, because I was playing a Decker. And I guess in Dead Man's Switch, it kind of goes back to what you're talking about tutorial-wise. Mm-hmm. They kind of ease you into the setting. So they allow you to ask a lot of questions. So it's really funny to be like this badass Decker who is like smarter than anyone else there and like knows how to hack better than anyone, knows how to like manipulate programs better than anybody else in this base. But I'm going around the base and like asking questions like, what is the internet?
I know as I was playing through Dragonfall, there were so many dialogue options for basically they were all intelligence, decking, drone manipulation, and charisma.
Yeah.
Anything else was very, very rare.
Really?
But basically, those four things were what you, and it always killed me whenever I would see a grayed out option I can't pick.
I'm glad you brought that up because it was one of those things where I felt like that went counter to the rest of the game, like the way the dialogue options were set up, mm-hmm. because this feels like a game that wouldn't even show you that there was a hidden option. Why reveal that?
Yeah, why reveal it? Yeah,
I mean,
why
reveal it unless the condition is met?
And also, depending on your charisma, you also get etiquette.
Yeah, I was about
to ask
if they
kept
that.
So basically, you pick up the slang for certain groups of people. And once you, if you have that etiquette, then you can communicate more effectively with other Shadowrunners, academics,
security
workers, gang members. Forget, there are a whole bunch of etiquettes.
Did that show you in Dragonfall? Did that show you hidden dialogue options, mm-hmm. or was it just okay?
They would be grayed out if you could have it or not.
Okay. Same in the base game.
So basically, it seems like secure. I didn't know until after playing it. Security seems pretty important.
Not in my game.
Anytime you want to break into somewhere, you need to have security.
Not in my game, because that's what I went with. Because that was my logic. I was like, well, I'm a fucking Decker, so I probably need security to know how to get into places. Mm-hmm. It came into play twice. And the one that I saw the most was Shadowrunner for etiquette.
Oh, see, I've had Shadowrunner once.
Because Shadowrunner is pretty much an option to get more money on anything.
Okay.
Whenever you talk to your fixer, there's a hidden Shadowrunner dialogue option that if you click it, I think you get an extra percentage of new yen.
Mm.
Yeah. Did you run out of money? I ran out of money.
I also didn't have I was unarmed, so I didn't have to spend a lot of money on weapons and shit like that. So
I ran
money
out
was
of,
never a problem for
I
me.
Ran out of money putting runners together because that comes out of your pocket.
Oh, because I had that. I could hire people, but I never did it. I used my free team.
Yeah, exactly.
So I could see where that would be an issue.
So how did you handle decking in your game if your decker died?
A chance to recruit another one.
Okay.
If you take another mission and you're nice to him, and you pass a certain number of checks, he just joins you.
Okay.
And then you have a new decker.
Cool. Because that's a vital
element.
Yeah.
Usually there's a way a workaround. You can go somewhere else and go through someone's files and find the password.
Yeah, but it's a pain in the ass,
as opposed to just having a decker break it immediately. Yeah. So
it's this could take 40 minutes or it could take 5 minutes for the decker.
But overall, I think $15 is a bit much to pay for Dragonfall.
Man,
but
I really want to buy it though, because I really, really liked the base game.
Yeah.
It fucking surprised me.
I'll play the base game and compare the two and tell you whether you should buy it or not.
Okay.
Or I'll just authorize you my Steam account and you can play it like that. it didn't have achievements, but I feel like the structure of this game isn't great for achievements that aren't storyline related.
Yeah.
Because there's not this would be shitty to have collectibles anything like that.
Ugh.
So other than maybe Blitzkrieg, and that is where you recruit the Decker Blitz. I mean, it's shit like that would be the achievements.
Right.
So not a great game for achievements.
Yeah, I didn't come up with any. There were a few that I wrote down, but I wrote down names. I was like, oh, this would be funny. And then was like, eh, fuck it.
Yeah.
So I gave up on that in case you didn't notice.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit the setting. So I think that's fair.
Oh, I think that this was definitely worth the purchase. I said, I bought it so long ago. I don't know what I paid for, but
I think I paid $7 for both of them.
That's
it's well worth that. Well worth that.
I really want to play Dragonfall. Because I really liked the standalone, just the Dead Man Switch. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really cool. And the setting is so good that it almost makes me want to learn the system. But I tried about a year ago, and man, the system was weird.
Yeah.
system was
I remember
weird.
You buying the core rule book and showing it to me. And I was like, yeah, let's do the Shadowrun game.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, you have a baby, so it's either take care of the baby or learn Shadowrun.
Or raise the baby to learn Shadowrun.
To learn Shadowrun.
Exactly.
You're going to be a Decker.
Yeah. Henry, here's your first book. this will tell you everything about the world as it is. So you really need to study it in order to fit in to the world as it is today.
But you'll know all about the old tech whenever the world falls.
Exactly.
I had a big thing where I had to find a DVD player to play these ancient DVDs that had
in Dragonfall?
Information. Yeah.
So it's like that episode of Cowboy Bebop?
Yeah, exactly. You had to find a Betamax.
Right. Cool. Hey, Tyler.
Yes, Dave.
I had a good time.
Yeah.
I had a good time playing this game and talking to you about it. I wish our intro stories had been a little stronger. Mine in particular. I felt you talking about Jonas just experiencing other races for the first time. I feel like that was a good Shadowrun tie-in because all the different races in Shadowrun.
Mm-hmm. A lot of racist in Dragonrun too. One of my big things was the Humanus Corporation, who's a religion based on killing orcs and trolls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they pretty much get that on the head, right? Because that's totally what would happen if all of a sudden there were just elves one day. I have a feeling that there are a lot of humans who'd be like, oh, fuck that.
Yeah.
Nope. Kill them. Kill them.
Yep. You're right.
I mean, we live in Kentucky where a lot of white people can't tolerate anything else. Right, so it's easy.
You have pierced ears and tattoos. Yeah. Kill him. Burn it with fire.
It's pretty easy, I think, for us to see that that's how.
Like, my mom would get so mad if we walked by Hot Topic and I'd look in it and she'd like turn my head. Oh, man. Yeah. Country Castle and Hot Topic, forbidden fruit.
Not Ryan's, though.
No, that's fine. Obesity at a bargain is totally fine.
Well, I mean, to be fair, obesity is my disease of choice. If you were to give this game a beard, Tyler, mm-hmm. What kind of beard would you give it?
It would have to be a sort of chubby neck beard.
Okay.
From a man who's a decker, a fat decker neck beard.
A deck beard.
A deck beard. So he's very, very proficient and good at what he does.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of an unattractive beard.
Oh, yeah, well, sure.
Like Shadowrun, it's very good and intuitive, but it's still not super pretty. So
okay.
Bounces out.
That's fair. I like it. Tyler?
Yes, Dave.
If you were to give this game a pair of glasses, mm-hmm. What kind of glasses would you give it?
I'd have to give it one cybernetic eye.
Okay.
So you still got one eye for humanity and mm-hmm. one eye that takes away from your essence and is mechanical and helps you see an extra 30 feet in the dark.
Okay, fair.
Anybody call us? We got some more time.
Maybe. All right. First call. This is from 410.
Hey, guys. Tony again. One thing I forgot to mention when I just called a second ago.
Last week.
And Dennis will definitely suck your dick.
That's a right. great thing to have out of context. That's a great thing to have.
All right. Well, I mean, Lord Dennis, get back to us.
I mean, if Tony's not a liar, either Tony's a liar or you're going to suck our dicks. Let us know which one it is.
We got another call. This is from 319.
Hey, guys. It's 319 Cobra. Kyle calling. Just had a comment. Finished listening to your Mark of the Ninja episode, and I played Mark of the Ninja, but after listening to that episode, I think I know less somehow about Mark of the Ninja after having listened to that episode. Keep up the good work, guys. Bye.
You're welcome.
I like how the last sentence is keep up the good work. It's like, you made me dumber. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Yeah, woo, that Mark of the Ninja. Not a lot of game talk.
We just wanted to talk about, we missed each other, so we're talking about other things.
Burger Bottom was back on. Sorry, John. I know you're listening. I know you really don't like it when I just said Burger Bottom. Sorry about that. Also, you don't like it when I say butt juices. So, oh man, butt juices.
All over that Burger Bottom.
Next call, this is from 478.
All right. Mary, kill, snuggle. Gunther for Friends. Frank Buffet from Friends. Jack Geller from Friends.
Okay.
Okay.
You got your list?
Yep.
Okay, what you got?
You got, well, Mary, got to go, nice guy, also lots of money. He drives a Ferrari. So you marry Jack Geller.
Okay.
All he knows how to do is make coffee and be weird, and he's not even great at his job, and he says little Rachel, so you kill Gunther.
I feel bad for Gunther.
And because he's lovable. That motherfucker clears like $300,000 a year based on Friends royalties. He's good. But you want to snuggle Frank Jr. Frank Jr. is just adorable. Yeah. Everybody loves Giovanni Ribisi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel bad for Gunther. I really do. I don't know if I could kill him, but I'm not going to kill the other two.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess he has to go. And that was really the only thing I was on the fence about. So I guess I'm with you. I would choose the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty easy. Philly is pretty easy. It's a great question, though.
Yeah. I'm glad you're watching Friends, and so now you really you know more about Frank Jr.
Yeah, I do. So the guy who played Gunther, did you just pull that out of your ass, or does he really make like?
Yeah, he makes like around that much money based on royalties.
That's pretty good.
And he's only on the show because he was the only person, the only extra on set who knew how to work the coffee machine.
Really?
So then that's why he ended up getting lines and shit like that.
Man, I'm glad that you said that he was an extra. And this is why. I don't know if it is because I used to watch these television shows on a smaller screen, and now I watch them on like a 57-inch. Mm-hmm. I never noticed extras before, but like now I can't fucking watch a show and not notice extras. And it's like the biggest culprits are Friends and How I Met Your Mother. Because they're in that bar all the time and How I Met Your Mother. And then of course they're in Central Perk all the time and Friends. I just can't like concentrate on the actors because like I'm always just looking at like the extras in the background just being like, oh man, that person's really pretending to talk. But no words are coming out of their mouth. They're just pretending to talk. And I'll just like look at the next extra and I'll be like, I wonder what they're like.
What do they say? Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water.
And they're always like super emotive. And it's like, it takes me out because it's, I have never been in a place of business before and looked around and everyone is just like talking. Like How I Met Your Mother, like I looked at Nikki one time and I was like, not a single fucking person is on their cell phone right now. Not a single fucking person. Explain to me how this is reality. Because if I guarantee you, if I went to a fucking bar right now, no one's talking. They're either drinking or they're looking at their fucking smartphone.
Because what is it like, to my knowledge, like if you're on as an extra and you have no speaking lines, you basically get paid like $50. You don't make anything.
Right.
But even if you have like a word, you get paid way more automatically based on, I mean, whatever agreement or whatever they have. So like they will, in like crowd scenes, like I've heard like the crowd is all being silent and then they superimpose like the music over the top. Yeah. Or people yelling just goes a lot cheaper because of those kind of rules.
Yeah, I just don't understand why. I mean, you explain that rule and that makes sense. Why not just be like, okay, just stare at a phone. Just stare at a phone.
I'll give you $50 to play in your iPhone right here for a second.
Or is that where like the city of New York, like the city government steps in and they're like, no. We need to portray this city as an active,
it's vibrant.
Metropolis. You can't just have people staring at phones. You got to have them like, I don't know. They're dressed well. They are clearly living above their means. I don't know. Important questions. We got a 4-second call from 321.
Awesome.
Tyler and Dave, you play old games. Oh, fuck.
That sounded like Paul.
It did. And then he fell off a cliff, I guess. I don't know.
I hope you're okay. I hope you're okay, Paul. Let's see. We got another call. This is from 615.
Hey, Tad Pog. It's Paul Korn again. I had a lot of fun listening to Tyler's description of what a truck blast was, so I thought I'd keep that going and have you guys do my own personal urban dictionary. So we'll just start it simple here. I'm going to take something from the lore list in Final Fantasy VI and see what filthy thing you can come up with for it. So in the context of kinky sex, what is a pearl wind? All right, you guys have fun with that. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay. I feel like this is pretty much, I mean, we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. Like we're making eye contact right now. Like, I think immediately we're in the same ballpark. Mm-hmm. The setup is definitely a pearl necklace. Like I feel like this is just a build on the pearl necklace, which the pearl necklace being, you know, you know what a pearl necklace is. Mm-hmm. Explain it to me.
You come between a girl's tits. And then the way it arcs up around her neck, it becomes a pearl necklace.
Okay. So pearl wind.
Because, like, Tyler, you explaining this. Meg will love you explaining it.
Well, what it should have been like is, oh, God, that's what it is?
Oh, man. Oh,
Jesus. Man, I've been asking people for this before. I wouldn't have done that. I thought it was like a Bruce Wayne's parents die kind of thing, where it's like, you know, she drops the pearl necklace when she dies. I thought when you ask for a pearl necklace, you're asking someone to kill your mom. This is much worse.
I don't know why I gave that guy $2,000 for a pearl necklace. That hitman on the deep net.
So I thought a pearl win would be like, you perform a pearl necklace for a willing participant, be it a woman or a man. And then I guess you put an oscillating fan in front of their chest.
See, I was thinking, like, do you sit them in front of the oscillating fan?
You come through the
fan, and it sprays all over.
That's good. That's healing wind. I like that. I like, mainly because I like the chaos. I love the image of, well, I shouldn't say I love the image, but fuck it. I love the image of Tom Sawyer jerking off onto a fan and just spraying all over Huckleberry Finn.
That's a fast way to whitewash your fans. This is so fun, jerking off in this oscillating fan.
I love that. I love being your personal Urban Dictionary. So please keep those coming. Mm-hmm, please mm-hmm. keep those coming.
That's some good subject material.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time to take a few more.
You think we take some more? I know we got some more Patreon folks to thank.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to forget that. Let's see. This is from 865.
Hey, Tyler and Dave. This is Michael from the Two Dudes Podcast. I was listening to the segment when Dave says, hey, Tyler, if you were to give this a beard, what kind of beard would it be? And for some reason, the depths of my brain brought out the song by Chicago's. I think it's What Kind of Man Would I Be? And now every time I hear Dave say, what kind of beard would it be? I hear it in the tune of Chicago's What Kind of Man Would I Be? A little embarrassing. But if you haven't heard the song, look it up and it'll get stuck in your head, too. But I have a question also. And Nicole is doing her own show now, or I guess we all hope she's going to do her own movie podcast. My question is, if you were to force Josh to do his own podcast, what kind of podcast would Josh do? So, that's my question. Take it easy, guys. Bye.
Thank you for calling, Michael. I have my answer immediately.
Mm-hmm.
It came to mind. The very first thing I thought of was I would love to listen to a podcast where Josh talks about classic literature. Like, that would be, I think, the best.
Homer's The Odyssey.
It's just him. He's not allowed to have guest hosts. Like, it's just Josh. It's just Josh, and that's what he does.
Does he straight up, like, Andy Kaufman style, read every episode? Is like,
I think that would be fine.
Or it's like where Josh reads Pride and Prejudice. And it's like 8 hours long. Every episode is him reading a book.
I think it'd be bigger than Serial, honestly. Have you heard this? Is this a joke? We don't know.
Him doing a Terraria podcast.
Oh, man.
Exclusively Terraria. Or oh, man, there's a lot of good things for Josh to do. A miniature painting podcast. Or a podcast about excuses to make when you don't want to go to work or hang out with your friends. Apathy Cast with Josh Nance, where you just talk about how to get out of shit.
That was a good question. Are you familiar with the song, What Kind of Man Would I Be?
Because you know I grew up having no sense of music whatsoever.
Yeah.
So my first introduction to Chicago was from the movie Little Nicky. When they talk about you play Chicago backwards, and that's all the devil's lyrics. So really, from the AFI classic, Little Nicky, starring Adam Sandler.
I haven't heard it either. So,
but that will make people who love music fucking cringe.
I mean, I'm familiar with Chicago. I don't think I've heard the song. Or if I have, I don't realize the title of the song. That should be our next podcast, where we just talk about music.
Oh, man. We just music and sports.
Yeah. And Mark of the Ninja. You want to do another call?
Yeah.
I'll do you one better. I got a text message here that I'm bound to fuck up. This is from 303, who says, fucking Tadpog, semicolon. Matt here, first time texter.
Okay, all right.
Forever long listener, self-made fucking youngest listener. I forgot to leave a game in my 5-star review. If you gentlemen could play Spelunky, you would make the great god Kali pleased with you. Thanks, guys. Hey, thanks for texting.
I have Spelunky.
I do as well.
So,
And I feel like way in the way back, you and I talked about doing Spelunky.
I think when we're talking about doing like La Mulana.
Well, I think we talked about Spelunky immediately after La Mulana because we started playing La Mulana and it was like, oh, this is hard. It's going to take forever. That was the first game that wasn't on the list that we were like, oh, we got to play this. And then we played 20 minutes of it. And then like both of us just lost complete interest.
Yep. This is hard and we can't just roll this out for tomorrow. So let's just talk about it for like 2 years.
No, that's the fucked up thing. We haven't brought that up again. Like that was just one of those things where it's like we witnessed a boy fall into a river and drown. Like we just never talked about it again.
Oh, man.
That's what the La Mulana situation
is. That's our last episode of Tadpog. We'll be over La Mulana.
No, the last episodes were like, hey, man, you remember when we watched that boy drown? Man, that was fucking sad, wasn't it?
We'll play that one Phil Collins song.
Yeah, we're back to our music podcast.
Yeah. And I only know about that Phil Collins song because it was a Patton Oswalt bit. So I want some people to be like, how does he not know about Chicago but knew about that? No. It all ties into all my musical knowledge is like comes from Saturday Night Live, movies, stand-up, or the Foxtrot comic strip.
Yeah, like, the, you know, that it reminds me of that Phil Collins song, Walk This Way.
Oh, that was good. Now we need to do housekeeping.
Yep.
Thanks for listening, everybody. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. So don't miss the next episode. We should be talking about Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Unless we totally La Mulana it.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. You know what we still love, what still helps us out, the biggest marketplace, is 5-star iTunes reviews. They still have a lot of power in a lot of different ways, helping us get out there more, helping our show pop up on iTunes more, and also leaving a 5-star written review. And in that review, if you put a game you want us to play, we're doing the eventually list now. We're going to get through the current as it is right now eventually list by the end of this year. So you can add to that, fuck everything up. We'd love it. Or a guest host you want for a certain episode, put it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we promise that we will get to that eventually.
Don't worry, guys. Like Tyler said, we'll be back. We'll be talking about something. Probably not La Mulana. In the meantime, you can always find us on tadpog.com. That's where the show notes live. You can find us on Facebook. We are at facebook.com/tadpog. There's a lot of cool people there doing a lot of cool shit. You can find us on Twitter. We are at tadpog_podcast. It's cumbersome, I realize. Thank you very much for everybody who retweets our episode announcements. And fuck, just tweets at us. I really appreciate that. I read all of them and am thoroughly enjoyed to spend time online talking about whatever you send. Mm. Whatever you send. I love it. Any time I spend on Twitter is time I'm not working. So that's great. We had some more Patreon supporters.
Yes. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
We didn't think anybody would do it.
I know. I was worried the three people who asked us to do it wouldn't pledge. I was like, oh, man, they were probably just saying that to be nice. And I get it. Like,
you guys should do this. Somebody else will probably give you money.
Exactly. So we got some more, and I want to take just a little bit to thank listener Chris for his pledge, David Roberts for his, Ben, man, I hope I don't mispronounce your last name, but I'm probably gonna, Ben Caruth? I don't know. Call us.
Let us know.
Let us know. I want to thank Sandwich Prince, Phil.
He gave money.
Yeah.
Should we promote him to what he, should we give him that last bump?
Yeah, okay.
So Sandwich Lord Phil Hawkins.
Sandwich Lord.
And everybody else who also donates, call and text too. Let us get to know you a little bit more and we'll give you a title.
We'll definitely give you titles. Yeah. Lord Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting into an area where I'm not sure if we thanked them already on the show, but so fuck it. We're going to do it again.
Thank him again.
Kyle. Yeah, so I know we did Kyle because he was SoundCloud.
SoundCloud fan.
Also, we want to thank Soul Sister Yarn Sorceress, Chandra, again, mainly because you're awesome, and I just wanted to say that title.
She changed her name on the Patreon to that.
Yeah, I love it. Archivist, Paul Korn. And Master of Coin?
Master of Coin, yes.
Master of Coin, Ryan Walters. Thank you, all of you. I don't know if you can search for us on Patreon still. Yeah. I still don't think you can. So if you want to join the League of Extraordinary Listeners, I think we'll have a link to that posted on Facebook.
It'll be in the show notes. It'll be on Facebook. Yeah. I'm sure it's on Twitter too.
And if you don't want to do it, that's cool too.
Yeah.
I mean,
because it can be, you know, it's set up like a monthly subscription. So if you give us $1 a month,
that would be
fantastic. That helps us, only helps us make the show better.
Well, I mean, not to put anyone down or anything, but I just want to let everybody listening know that the people we just thanked, they pledged way over $1.
They did.
They pledged way over $1. So just keep that in mind. I mean, don't let that intimidate you, but also I don't want to belittle the very generous people that we just thanked.
That's very true. Our theme song?
Our theme song, Tyler. Is Moves by Sycamore Drive.
Yeah.
A link to that track, Tyler, can be found in the show notes at tadpog.com. I do want to give the phone number so that the pledgers that we want to give titles to can call us so we can get to know them. If you don't feel comfortable calling, that's okay too. You can text. That number is 270-883-2555. Yeah. If you do call, try to keep it under 3 minutes. Would you like to close this?
Or what's our Twitter?
At tadpog_podcast. I said that already. It's cool.
Oh, did you?
You're drinking hooch. It's
no big deal. I am drinking hooch. I'm out of this red solo cup of hooch. I'm out of this hooch in my cup. I want to close it out.
I feel like we should do something gritty, right? Because Shadowrun's gritty.
Gritty?
Yeah.
Something gritty. Because my original inclination is not so gritty to try and do it like Lorenzo Music voicing Garfield.
Oh, okay. Unless No.
Let's do a gritty Garfield.
I think Bill Murray covered that, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, Bill Murray.
Man, how different is our Lorenzo Music going to be from our Josh Nance, though?
Right, let's find out.
All right.
Now I'm never going to be able to hear Josh again without thinking of Garfield.
Good. Now you know my life for the last 20 years.
Now I'm going to have to do Josh. This is fucked up. All right.
So until next time,
Tropical Capricorn. So it's pretty much just a bassier Josh.
It's a bassier Josh. You take away that kind of inflection.
I also, for the record, think those were probably the worst Garfield impressions.
Yep.
I can't name one person with confidence who played for the Cardinals. Daryl Strawberry?
Dodgers.
Mets.
I'm out of baseball players, I know. Except for Pete Rose, and I know Pete Rose was the Reds.
Yeah,
he was the Reds, and he should be in the fucking Hall of Fame. Fuck all that bullshit about betting.